Now we're going on record. This is a parole hearing for Kenneth Hunt, ADC number 300318. And according to information that's been provided to the board, he has waived his appearance before the board. Mr. Hunt has been certified by the Department of Corrections for a 412B-411 hearing. That is, he's being considered for to be paroled to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. And just for information, he's currently serving one count. This is a Class 2 felony for sexual conduct with a minor. He received 10 years on that sentence, and based on information that's been presented to the board, and if the prosecutor finds something that we don't have, I would welcome her to give us some information because she's quite familiar with this situation. He was sentenced at its beginning based on information that's been presented to the board back on October 4, 2013. And he became parole eligible on October 4, 2018. And his earned release date and SED date were listed as the same. And that would be June 4, 2020. If he is paroled to his next consecutive sentence, he would be paroled for another sexual conduct with a minor, and that would also be for 10 years. And if he's not to move forward in terms of parole to his next sentence, that would have its beginning date on June 4th, 2020, and he would become parole eligible on June 4th, 2025. And his official release date would be that April 4, 2027. As I've indicated, he decided to waive his appearance. As based on information that I gleaned in looking at his record, he is currently housed in the state of Mississippi, I believe in a federal facility down in Mississippi, and the state of Arizona agreed that he would be there, and his sentence is running concurrent to what he is serving in Mississippi. He has these counts in Mississippi, and he's serving those, and they are running concurrent, and therefore state of Arizona agreed that he would go to Mississippi. He had a plea agreement, I believe, with the state of Arizona, and we can find out a little more from the county attorney's office. And just very briefly, I did discover the fact that he molested three victims, and they were his girlfriend's daughters, victim A, victim B, and victim C. And each one of them, it involved sexual contact with each of them. Based on what I also saw, it just seemed to me that the mother might have been complicit in some of these, in as much as one time she left one state and they fled to Mississippi, and she did not, for whatever reason, although this is not her hearing here, but she did not work with trying to make sure that her husband would have been paid his debt to society. In looking at his record, I do not take note, and it might be somewhere that I did not see. I don't see where he's had his sexual classes as of this time, and that's something that we always like to look at here in Arizona. I cannot speak for the federal prison down in Mississippi, but this would be something that we would have an interest in here in the state of Arizona. As indicated, I'm very happy to have on the phone with us the county attorney from Maricopa County Attorney's Office, and this is very rare for us, although it does happen from time to time. She actually was the prosecutor for this particular case, so I'm going to yield to the county attorney from Maricopa County. And as always, if you could just state your name for the record, please, ma'am.
Yes, my name is is Elizabeth Reamer. I am a deputy county attorney at the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, and I am in the sex crimes unit.
Okay, thank you very much, and welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. And we are prepared to listen to you at this time, since he is not available and he does not have any supporters in the room, and to the best of he does not have any victims in the room. Therefore, we will be delighted to listen to you at this time, please, ma'am.
Thank you, and good morning to all of the board members.
And just for your information, I'm sorry, I should have done this up front.
Okay.
There are five board members present today, and they are the Honorable Mr. Louis Kiwanis, the Honorable Mr. David Neal, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, and my name is C.T. Wright. I'm board chair. So now I will yield to you.
Thank you. The main points that I want to get across associated with this hearing are my interaction with the victims and sort of how the case progressed. I know that you all have received a summary of the facts from my office, and I won't belabor them, but I will make sort of broad statements about what happened in this case and then let you know what happened once the case got into the system in Arizona. The three victims in this case were born to the same mother who got into a relationship with the Mr. Hunt. He then sexually abused all of them. He passed them around to his friends. There were parties at their house that included drugs and alcohol and an unsafe environment, of course, for children. One of the three victims became pregnant, and once she had the baby, Mr. Hunt and his girlfriend, the mother of these three girls, stole the baby from the child and moved to Mississippi. This happened so long ago and pre the internet that they were successful in doing that. And once everything sort of came to light as to the abuse here in Arizona, a warrant was issued for Mr. Hunt's arrest, but it did not lead to Arizona finding out where Mr. Hunt was until that child that he stole from one of the victims in this case became old enough to have sleepovers, and then he sexually abused her friend. That is the underlying fact for the Mississippi conviction. Once the Mississippi case got into the system, our warrant here in Arizona alerted, and the case was revitalized. At the point that we realized that he was in custody in Mississippi for molest, our case came into the system, of course, officially, and contact was made with the girls who were now adults to talk of, you know, we had to do an investigation into where are they, what is their status, you know, are they willing to cooperate with prosecution all this time later, because decades and decades had gone by where they were left in Arizona without a parent. Their father was not in the picture. So when their mother left with the stolen grandchild and left with Mr. Hunt and crossed the country, they were left with essentially nothing. It will be of no surprise to the board members that these children were not provided the life skills necessary, the love and care that children need to then thrive as adults. And I can attest to the fact that the girls, the victims in this case, had a very, very hard time and continued when the case was in the system to have a very hard time just with life because they didn't have the foundation that they should have been given. When the case got into the system in Arizona, we looked into all of Mr. Hunt's girlfriend's daughters who were indicted in, you know, the case from so many years ago. And what we learned is that one of them had been killed in a domestic violence murder in Tucson. I mention that because there is no domestic violence woman or man who is responsible for the violence perpetrated on them, of course. But it is telling that one of these girls left alone by Mr. Hunt and his girlfriend, the mother of these girls, ended up in a very, you know, tragic end to her life. And I attribute that end in part to what Mr. Hunt and his girlfriend did. That left two live victims, one of whom was not initially fully indicted, so there was a lot of discussion with me and my colleagues and the police and the defense attorney at the time about how we would proceed on this case. Mr. Hunt presented at every single court hearing as 2 feet from death. He let everyone know at every hearing how sick he was, and there was no way he was going to live another day, and that this was too much for him, and he wanted to go back to Mississippi. I mention that because today we have a clemency hearing where Mr. Hunt is still alive and well and asking to move on to the next setting. If you were to look at the video of the hearings that we had in this case in, you know, 2013, you will see a man who's in a wheelchair, who appears decrepit, who it coughs and makes you think that there is no chance he will outlive anything, let alone a lengthy sentence. And it is my position that he did that in an attempt to get leniency in this case. What ended up happening is the sentencing guidelines at the time were much less harsh than they are now. If he had been indicted in 2018 for having sexual contact with someone under the age of 15, and that sexual contact included penetration, the sentence that he would be looking at is a minimum of 13 years flat and a maximum of 27 years flat. Back when these crimes were committed, the sentencing guidelines were much less serious, and therefore what we call sort of the hammers that we have help us get a harsh sentence just did not exist. And on top of that, he was already serving a sentence in Mississippi for the sex abuse that he committed in that state. What he was saying is that he's so close to death and there's nothing that can be done and he doesn't want to take a plea to anything serious, along with the fact that my office just, based on the sentencing guidelines, didn't have a lot to go on in terms of holding him accountable, and the fact that the victims were in such trauma over him being found and him learning that he had sexually abused someone in Mississippi and was serving time for that, learning that the case would be resurrected in Arizona. It was a lot for these adult women to handle. Adding to that, the fact that the victim who gave birth to a child that was then stolen from her learned, because of the case resurrecting in Arizona, where he was and therefore where her daughter was. In the pendency of the case that I prosecuted, that victim reunited with her daughter, met her for the first time. The daughter was a teenager at the time. And I will note, in terms of the victimization that is at play in this case, that that child, the one who he raised as his daughter, did not know until the Arizona case came to light that the people raising her were not her bio mom and dad, which is what she had been told. She did not learn that her bio mom was another person living in another state until after the case in Arizona was resurrected. And she didn't know that the man who raised her as her father was not her father, but essentially her step-grandfather, and also likely her father. And I say that because the victim believes that the pregnancy that she took full term and then gave birth to a baby associated with, she believed Mr. Hunt to be the father of that baby, who then stole the baby from her and raised it as his own across the country. We, associated with my case, did a DNA test on this teenager because obviously that would be evidence in my case associated with sexual abuse of the victim all those years ago. What we learned from the DNA test was that he actually was not the father of the baby. And what I find to be tragic, and something I wanted to make sure to convey to you all on the board, is that the victim in our case, who gave birth to this baby, believed for all of those years that the baby's father was Mr. Hunt and that he had stolen the baby from her. What she learned because of the open Arizona case was that he was not the father. And although there may be some victims who would be relieved by that news, it further traumatized her. And what she conveyed to me was now she was in a position where she didn't know who the father of her baby was because he had passed her around to his friends during these drunken and drug-out parties, and so was in a position where all those years she believed him to be the father and to have stolen her baby, and then learned he was not the father at all and had stolen her baby. And of course, we all know that victims handle everything in their own unique way. And for her, it was extraordinarily traumatic that she was then placed in a position where she didn't know who the father of her baby was. And she placed on her a lot of guilt and a lot of shame over that fact, as though she somehow had any responsibility in any of this. As though she had made a decision to be, you know, promiscuous and then not know who the father of her baby is. That is the shame that she put on herself. And although I tried to, you know, show her a different way of thinking about it and tried to explain to her that none of this is on her, none of this is her fault. The fact that she doesn't know who the father of her baby is in no reflection on who she is as a human being. But regardless of what I, a stranger, said to her, she took that in and was very, very upset by that. And again, that is a direct consequence of the sexual conduct that this man participated in. When we knew that it would be concurrent with the case in Mississippi, that I didn't have a lot that I could do in terms of punishment here, in part because of the statutes at the time of the crimes being committed here, but also because of the sentence that he received in Mississippi. He received a sentence very close in time to when Arizona was alerted and then the case resurrected. So I wasn't in a position where he was almost done with that sentence and I could give him a lot more time here. I will tell you that the two victims who lived to see this case through the system continued to tell me that they felt that I was not getting them justice. They understood that the concurrent sentence meant he wasn't going to receive additional time for what they had experienced, what happened to them from a victimization standpoint, and were very unhappy with me and felt like I was their only shot at justice and that I wasn't getting that for them. This hearing is not about me, and I don't want to suggest that I'm attempting to make it about me. I tell you that because it is a reflection on how they viewed the sentence in this case, how they viewed the court system and what it was able to do for them, which is to say that they viewed that they didn't get anything and that he essentially got a free pass for the victimization that they were subject to so young in their lives. And I wanted to make sure that I was able to appear for this so that their voices could continue to be heard. And what I ask of the board is to show to those two women that what happened to them does matter, and what happened to them is horrible, and what happened to them is something the defendant should have to serve time for. And so the request is that he not be granted clemency, that he be required to serve the entire sentence, even if it is concurrent with the time in Mississippi or run sort of at the same time so far. I think the victims deserve to hear that a judge or someone that is a board member, someone of an authority figure, decided and took a stand and said, this is unacceptable. And because this is unacceptable, I will not allow you to not serve the full sentence. And so, to the board members, my request, based on my knowledge of the victim's belief system, is that the board deny and reject the defendant's request to move on.
Thank you so very much, and the information that you provided to the board is very helpful because our package was not complete, and much of what you have shared with the board that we were not aware of. Now we'll go to any question that board members might have, but my first question, though, would be, where are the two victims who are still alive today? Are they in Arizona or Mississippi, or do you know where they are, or can that be put on record, or it cannot be on record?
I don't know current day. When I prosecuted the case, neither one of them was in Arizona. They were in other portions of the country, although I don't have any reason to believe either one of them has ever been in Mississippi. They have no tie to that state.
Okay. Well, that's very helpful. I'm going to hear the other board members at this time. I think Donald, but Mr. Johnson, hand is already up. People are very anxious to get some information.
Thank you. I just had a couple of questions. How come he wasn't charged with more crimes here other than just those two? I mean, we see him come across here with numerous charges.
I think that I heard your question to be, why wasn't he charged with more crimes? Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Part of the reason that he was not charged with more crimes is because the victim that was killed in the domestic violence situation in Tucson, her counts had to be dismissed since she's no longer alive, and we didn't have an ability to go forward on those charges. Another problem with moving forward was that there was a little bit of confusion about what was initially disclosed to the police and then later information that was provided and a statute of limits situation. And so we were really limited in, part of the problem was that we had most of the recordings from back then that were still available, but we didn't have everything because of the time gap, and unfortunately some things were lost. It became an issue of what did the girls say at the time. Obviously one of them is no longer with us, and then there was additional information that came forward, but it was unclear the extent of the interviews that were done since some of the evidence was lost, and we just weren't able to move forward with anything more.
Okay, so what was the time gap between the time that the victims actually came forward and the time that it occurred? We don't have any of that information, so.
What is the time gap between when they came forward and when he was prosecuted?
No, when they came forward and when the incident happened.
My understanding is that it was within about 2 years.
Okay.
The abuse allegations did not come to light in terms of police involvement. They came to light about within 2 years of the abuse. There is information that the girl's mother knew of the abuse, but she didn't report it to anybody. And so the abuse really came to light after the baby was born. And then they left to raise the baby as their own.
So this is just a curiosity question. Did the victim who had the baby and thought that that Mr. Hunt was the father, did the two of them ever reunite, the mother and the daughter?
Yes, they reunited after the case got into the system in Arizona. The police here were able to find her, and that was an important factor because they needed to get a buccal swab from her for DNA purposes. And once the police found her, they let the birth mother know where she was, and they have reunited, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Johnson. The Honorable Mr. Rico Wallace will speak next.
Ma'am, I just have a few follow-up questions just to understand. And again, it's not like it's going to make have big impact on my decision, but what happened to the mother in this case, the one that ran off with the baby?
Honestly, I'm not quite sure. I know that she wasn't prosecuted in Mississippi, and I'm not sure. She was never prosecuted in Arizona. We never were able. She has never admitted to any knowledge or anything. And I don't know what ended up happening in terms of the police's attempt to investigate her related to like a child abduction or a kidnapping. Nothing was ever submitted to me related to her. And what I know, my purview is sex crimes. And what I know is that they were unable to build a case against her in terms of her knowledge, because although the girls were saying that there were things she knew, there was no additional evidence to support that, and she was denying that she had any knowledge of any sexual abuse that was happening. And she, as far as I know, was never willing to answer any questions related to the baby, how they ended up in Mississippi, her abandoning her children, that side of it. But I will note that she was already associated with the system in Mississippi in that her the defendant and she, I'm not sure if they ever legally married. I thought that they might have, but I can't confirm that today. The abuse that happened to the stolen baby's friend, my understanding has always been that happened in home. And so I know that she'd already had police contact associated with that and had shut down completely even before the Arizona case resurrected.
Okay, the second question was, he's got separate charges in Mississippi, is that correct?
Yes, related to a separate victim.
Okay, and how much longer does he have in Mississippi? And if you don't know, that's fine.
Yes, unfortunately, I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I don't know what their sentencing
is. I don't want to belabor this.
I'm sorry?
I don't want to belabor this. I just wasn't sure if you knew, and I appreciate it.
I don't. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Any further questions by board members? No further questions by board members. And I just ask this, and you may or may not have the answer. When did the initial crime take place? Do you know the year or approximately the year?
You know what? I'm sorry. My paperwork is in court right now and it's
okay.
In session, and I don't want to interrupt. But I believe that, let me think. So I might be able to do the math. Hold on one second. I apologize. He was prosecuted in 2013.
Right.
And the baby would have been born. I believe that the abuse began in the early 80s.
When was that question?
Long term, it went on for a long time.
When was I asking that question? I was just trying to make a determination in my mind for our purpose, whether the abuse took place before 1984 or after 1984. I'm looking for that. Yes, I believe my colleague was going to.
Dr. Wright, on the sentencing document, it shows a range from 1979 to 1984.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any further questions, board members?
No, thank you, sir.
Okay, we're going to continue with this hearing, and we welcome you to stay on, and if your business schedule permits, and if not, we do understand. And at this time, the board is going to go into discussion. I will just raise the question again, although I think I know the answer. Is there anyone in the room, any supporters for Mr. Hunt? Is there any victims in the room for this particular hearing? There are not. Therefore, we will now go to discussion. Board members, as always, we do our discussions in public, and and under open meeting law, everyone can listen, and everything is being recorded. The board is now in discussion. I think that this is a very interesting situation, and in my opinion, it is also a complicated one. However, I do feel that victims, the two victims who are still alive now, I think that just unfortunately that this happened, and that they don't feel that that they received justice. I can assure them that this board will take everything under consideration in making this decision, not only today, but if he's not, or sometime in the future, because this is to be considered whether he would be paroled to his next consecutive sentence. And we want everybody, we want the victims to know that we are concerned, and we will look at it at all times, trying to be fair to all. Just as one board member, after reading the information that we received yesterday and after hearing this information from today from the prosecutor's office, from the Maricopa County's office, I am not in favor of moving him to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge, but I'm prepared to listen to other board members at this time. Yes, the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Just out of complete respect to the victims, I would support that as well. I think what they've been through was just tragic. And I would not support. I think Mr. Hunt should serve every minute that he was sentenced. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Yes,
Honorable. Yes, in that same interest of justice, of course, this is far beyond our purview, but it's only too bad we cannot extend the sentence. And I agree with my colleague, Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you. Any further further discussion by the board members? Here and none. I'm going to offer a motion, and my motion is going to be very simple: to deny parole to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharges to deny.
I'll second.
Agree.
Motion by myself, C.T. Wright, seconded by the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. Agreed by the Honorable Mr. Johnson, the Honorable Mr. Neal, and the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis. And based upon that 79-84, we don't know the exact dates, we will not go for a one-year set-off. That's why I was trying to get the dates to see if we could go for a one-year set-off, but I don't believe that that would be appropriate at this time. And this this is a 412B 411. That's the block that I will check on the here. And the reasons, some of the reasons that I will give, and board members, please help me here to delete or to add in, is that I might not have included. Serious and violent offense, in my opinion, anytime there's a sexual conduct with a minor, serious and deviant offense. Trauma to the victim, age of the victim, because we know that they were quite young. Multi-victims, we know that there were at least three, if not more, victims. As far as we can tell, there's a lack of programming, and especially as it relates to sexual programming. He would not qualify for a release plan. As far as I can tell in looking at the information, I don't believe that we have anything that we could say that is sufficient for family or community support in the state of Arizona. We don't know what's going on in Mississippi. And what else should be included, board members, or deleted? Hearing nothing else from board members, at this time, once again, as I've indicated, Mr. Hunt has been denied his 412B 411, parole to his next consecutive sentence, or absolute discharge. And Mr. Kenneth Hunt, ADC number 300318, and he will be qualified to come before this board again in around 6 months once he's been certified by the Department of Corrections. This will end this hearing, and I want to thank you so very much for providing us with all that information. And perhaps if you have any new information around 6 months from now, you can share that with the board as well. And thank you for your wonderful letters that you presented to the board as well, that we've had an opportunity to review the letters that you presented to the board. Thanks again, and this will end this hearing. Thank you.